Southampton's Voice.
Voice FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Business with Matt Trevis on Southampton's Voice FM. From startups to established companies, I'll be bringing you a variety of guests from Southampton's business community. And today I'm in the studio with Charlotte Farrell, founder of Sophie's Legacy, an incredible charity set up in memory of a remarkable young girl who touched so many lives. Charlotte, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. I'm really thrilled that you could make it into the studio today because I know that this time of year especially, you're incredibly busy.
Yeah, we are really busy.
We're going to be unpacking some of that and you're going to tell us, you know, what you've been up to. But let's kick off, shall we? Let's kick off. So Sophie's Legacy, a charity set up in memory of your daughter, Sophie, a remarkable young girl.
Yeah, so Sophie was aged 9 when she was diagnosed with cancer. And she went through quite grueling treatment. So 9 rounds of very aggressive chemotherapy, 7 weeks of radiotherapy in London, but sadly never got into remission. And she relapsed whilst at the very end of her treatment. She was on maintenance chemo and she relapsed 8 weeks into that. And at that point, her body was pretty battered, to be honest. And she was not going to withstand the treatment that could have been offered. So at that point they were like, there's very little options now. It's now about biding time rather than ever getting a cure. So I had the horrific job of saying to Sophie, I mean, she was very bright. You were never going to get away from telling her what was going to happen. And I felt that she had a right to know as well. So yeah, I told her that sadly the cancer was back. She knew what that meant, and she knew that she was not going to make it. So she set out writing a bucket list very quickly into
her legacy.
Yeah, which ends up has now become her legacy. But yeah, she wrote a bucket list of things she wanted to do in the time she had left, which was some amazing things. But what made her list quite different is that there were some things on there she wanted changed in her memory when she was gone, and that now forms the backbone of our charity.
Tell us about some of the things that that you do.
So she wanted parents to be fed in hospital when they stay in with their children, because the majority of hospitals in the country don't actually feed the parent that stays overnight. Yet the only facilities you've got in the room, in the, you know, there's a communal kitchen type place, is a kettle or microwave, but nothing to cook or do anything really with, no food. And I had many times of being in there and Sophie didn't want me to leave her to go to the shop or do anything. And it's also really costly when you're in hospital to even go to Costa or the M&S shop. So she wanted parents to be fed and some of that pressure to be taken off to make the experience more easier so that you didn't have to worry about toiletries or clothes or anything else. You just to focus on your child that's ill. That's what we want. And that's one of the things that we do.
Absolutely. Charlotte, when did you set the charity up?
So we got our charity number in May last year.
Which wasn't easy from what you've said.
No, it takes a lot to actually start a charity. It's not as straightforward as what people think. You think, oh, I'm just going to start a charity. But there's a lot of paperwork, a lot of things like the financial side of things that needs to be sorted. Yeah, there's a lot that went into that, but luckily, we had some amazing friends behind us helping us to get all that completed.
I was really excited when we first chatted because when you were telling me all the different things that you do and the work, the incredible work that goes into not just setting the charity up but running the charity. You know, there are so many parallels with the business community. I almost see running a charity is harder than running a business. You know, because you almost have to treat it like one. But you were saying a little while ago that, you know, the difference is you have to justify every penny of expenditure, every penny that you guys spend. So, for instance, if you want to get some staff or you need some help, you have to justify that. It's not the same as a business where you can, you know, you can just go and employ somebody if you want to. So there's all these added complexities, all these added charities. How have you been finding it?
Yeah, and that's one of the big challenges, to be honest, is constantly trying to find the time. And then you know you need some help and you're trying to find volunteers. Or if you go into the route of staff, you've then got to justify every single penny. It is public money that people are giving to you. And they want that to go on the core cost of what you set out to do. And that's what we aim to do all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does mean that there involves then a lot of hours for me and those around that literally invest so much time and energy into this.
I can imagine. We're going to delve into a little bit about, you know, the average, what does the average day look like for you in part two? Really interested to look into that. But just going back a step in terms of the charity's mission, because we've talked about, you know, Sophie's wish of parents being fed whilst they're in hospital. Mm. I noticed that there was something about having a dedicated play specialist as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so she wanted play to be available 7 days a week in hospital, in lots of the hospitals. It's mainly Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and she would be there at the weekend saying, I'm still here. Why is it? It's such a boring place.
Of course,
can't
yeah.
I play? Can I not do something? So we are working a lot with Starlight, which is a national children's charity working on play in hospital. And we've been doing lots in the last year over some national work to try and actually put some standards in and some guidelines and lots of things, which has never happened in over 15 years. So these are going to be published next year.
Absolutely. And of course, you're no stranger to lobbying government. And perhaps we can delve into that a little bit later, but you've got some experiences there that other people might be able to benefit from, because is it fair to say it's not easy?
No, not currently, probably in the last couple of years, with a revolving door of politicians and health secretaries. So I am about to go and see hopefully the next one that I have seen. Every single one of the health secretary that's been around in the last 2 years, which is no mean feat. And yeah, it is constant. And I did get a nice Christmas card from Rishi yesterday. So not many people can say they got a Christmas card from the Prime Minister, which was very nice.
Very true. Do you think he'd come on as a guest?
He's from Southampton. So you never know. But yeah, so we are really, really campaigning really hard with the government, because the government and the very top of the NHS are the ones that can actually make these changes nationally. It's me that can be campaigning, but it's those that are the very top that are actually going to be the ones that make the change.
Absolutely. You have a huge following on social media. Did you say you've got something like 50,000 followers?
Yeah, on Facebook and Instagram.
Wow.
Combined, yes, 50,000.
And how does that benefit to the charity? Does it give you that kind of platform? It gives you that sort of audience for you to really get the message out?
Yeah, so every time we ask something we need, we get inundated, like we did a toy appeal. I think we've got more toys than the toy shop has currently. Anything we ask, if we ask people to vote for us on things, or we just want to get the messages out, to be honest, as well. It's given us a really big platform to be able to do that, and people to get behind. And it's growing all the time, because sadly children end up in hospital. So there's new people that find out about us, and our following just keeps increasing, which is amazing in terms of the voice and the message that we want to get out there, that we need people behind us in order for that to happen.
Absolutely. Are there any other wishes that you've been working on? So we've talked about the food in hospitals for parents. What other bits are there to the legacy, so to speak?
Yeah, so she wanted there to be improvements to children's cancer. So she wanted chemo, for example, to be easier than what it currently was, which was pretty barbaric, to be honest.
Because it's not really designed, and I was reading on your website, it's not really designed for kids, chemo.
Yeah, so the majority of the drugs designed are designed for adults, but given to children. So if me and you had the same cancer as what Sophie did, age 9, we would have had exactly the same treatment, but just a slightly different dose because of our weight. Mm. That is the only difference. There, in the last 20 years, I believe there's been only 4 new chemo drugs designed for children, which, you know, cancer drugs, that is.
But is that because of the lack of funding? Because it's only, is it 3% funding for childhood cancer research?
Yeah.
So with more funding, could they then potentially look for different treatments?
Yeah, I'm absolutely convinced that it's down to some of the funding, it's down to some of the drug companies, to be honest, of actually, there's a lot of, you know, money side of it. It's all about money, which I find really difficult when there's children involved. Mm. I've had some conversations recently that there's a drug that could really radicalise one of the types of leukaemia, but the drug company is not interested in the UK in terms of giving it to us. they want to go to other countries where they can make more money from it, which is just awful when actually the survival rate could increase by 30% if that's given to them. And I just think this is children's lives.
Oh.
Why are we not... What, is it like one or two lives not enough to be saved? It's in that, and that would be more on that one, to be honest. But I just can't get my head around some of this. And that's why we will just continue to be campaigning and being the voice to just keep championing this.
I was going
to
say, you know, hearing things like that, you just despair. But then on the other side, it kind of fuels the fire. Because you're like, right, you know, we've got to do something about this.
Yeah, it's not good enough for it to have been this way. If Sophie had been diagnosed, I mean, she had a type of solid tumour, so it's a bit different to the blood cancers, but if she'd been diagnosed in the late 80s, she would have had exactly the same treatment as what she had 2 years ago. And that is just crazy to me. Like, we should, we're in the one of such an amazing country with some incredible expertise. And we've spoken to many who have got so many ideas. They're scientists, researchers, but they just haven't got the funding or the backing behind them to be able to make these changes. And I'm convinced that they will if that happens.
If there's anybody out there listening right now that thinks, do you know what, I think I can really help in this mission, what do people need to do? How can people get in contact?
So they can get in contact with us via our website, our social, any of our social media. We're on every type of social media there is.
You are, yeah.
So they can find us any which way, or they can say email in to us. Anyone who's got anything to offer on that, we would be gratefully received, because it is a continual battle, certainly with the NHS and the government. It's taken a lot in the last 2 years of just continually campaigning and asking there to be some change, which it's just, this is, and I keep going back to it, this is children's lives. They did nothing to get the cancer. It's not down to their lifestyle, their environment, anything. And yet they are given some of the least amount of funding out there.
Yeah, that's it. So how many, Charlotte, how many hospitals do you work with locally?
So we cover 10 hospitals in the south.
Oh, wow.
So Southampton being our biggest one, and we cover every single children's ward that there is. So we, it's not just cancer, like people, some people thought, particularly because that's what Sophie had. But she wanted there to be every child and baby covered, that she didn't want there to be a discrimination against on what was wrong with you, depending on what you're entitled to. And that's certainly what we came up against. So, yeah, we cover every single children's ward. So, for example, in Southampton, we cover 13 children's wards, including neonatal intensive care and every single children's ward that there is.
Oh, amazing.
And, yeah, we make sure that parents have access to food, they have toiletries, they have clothes, they have, you know, whatever they need within that to be able to take off the stresses.
That's it, just to sort of give it a little bit of relief, and just, it's one less thing to worry about, isn't it? Charlotte, hold that thought, because we're just going to take a short break. We've got some ads, but in part two we're going to delve into the world of running the charity on a day-to-day basis, and I believe you've got some stories to tell of some of your incredible volunteers as well, which I just find so inspirational. So don't go away, we'll be back right after this.
Voice FM.
You name it, we'll collect it.
So a bed?
Yep.
A sofa?
Yep.
All right, what about a shed?
Yes.
So anything?
Everything non-hazardous.
Hi there, I'm Steve.
And I'm Woody.
And we're the co-founders of Ethiclear.
We collect waste and clear houses.
And we do it ethically.
Because if your waste is good enough to be used again,
we'll make sure it is.
As Ethiclear has a network of like-minded people around Southampton.
So for anything
of almost any size
that you can't shift,
book your clearance at ethiclear.co.uk.
So I got a home office in the garden, and in the spring and the autumn it's perfect. But in the middle of winter and summer, it's not fun. The heater costs a fortune when it's cold outside, and in the summer, opening the windows just isn't enough. Which is why I got Just Coolers to install a small air conditioning unit. It keeps me cool in the summer and warm in the winter. It's the most cost-effective way of doing it. And with a 5-year guarantee and prices from $799, what's not to like? For your free quote, just visit just-coolers.com and keep your home office just right.
Voice FM.
If you're just joining in, if you're just tuning in, I'm here with Charlotte, founder of Sophie's Legacy, an incredible charity that's been set up in memory of a brilliant young girl who touched so many lives. Charlotte, welcome to the studio. Just give us a quick rundown about Sophie's Legacy, just for anyone that's just tuning in.
Yeah, so we support families admitted to hospital with their children, making sure that we take away as many stresses as possible and so that they can concentrate on looking after their children.
Absolutely. You guys do some incredible things, honestly. Give us a bit of an insight, Charlotte, you know, as founder of the charity, but also, you know, you are at the, you run the thing. Of course, you've got an amazing team of volunteers, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later. But give us a bit of an insight in terms of what a typical day looks like for you. You know, because I've just got the scenes in my mind of, you know, you're at hospital and you're helping so many families, helping so many parents out. It must be go, go, go.
Yeah, it is always go, go, go. And when I look at the emails at the end of the day, I'm like, I haven't responded to all of them. So that's a lot of the emails are responded to in the evenings, to be honest. So, yeah, I can be like going up to the hospital, which I do very regularly, and go up there and see families. I help do like the trolley runs around there and make sure that everything's been given to all the parents. Mm. To then having meetings with businesses, trying to get them to take us on as the charity of the year to...
So you are looking for corporate sponsors?
Yeah, always looking for sponsors to see if they will take us on for a charity of the year or help us. So we have... That can be with a financial or through volunteers, because a lot of businesses have like volunteer days for their employees, and we can definitely take those. We've got a lot to do in the office and out and about, so we have lots of meetings with them. Or it can be, say, responding to messages, going up to London a lot with the government, or, you know, presenting. I've got lots of presentations I've got coming up, for example, where I've been, I'm one of the key speakers and talking at all different venues and just getting the message out there, as well as what we're wanting to change, really. So
yeah, absolutely. Because when people arrive at the hospital, you know, obviously the help that you guys provide, how do they get that message? How does that happen?
So the help is automatic, so they don't have to be referred to the, you know, the charity or anything. It's all in the hospitals. So the staff all know where everything is. It's all in the accessible 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in like a parents' room that's it's like the communal sort of kitchen, really, where all the parents tend to go and get a drink. So lots of our things are provided there. There's some other things in different hospitals that's dotted all around. But the staff all know where everything is and they can access everything without being referred.
And when you say the things, what sort of things are we talking about?
So that's either snacks or drinks or toiletries, clothes. What else do we provide? He's trying to remember.
Well, you were saying...
Toys.
Yeah, and I was just going to say pizza.
Oh, pizzas,
Let's talk about the pizza.
Yes, we're very well known for pizzas. Pizzas is on tends to be over one night over the weekend, lots of them on a Saturday night. But we provide pizza for every single parent that's in hospital across a lot of our... hospitals that we cover. So for example, Portsmouth, we cover like take normally at least 40 pizzas there every Saturday night, and we've been doing that for 18 months every single week.
Oh wow. And when you talk to some of the parents, what do they say?
Well, there's a guarantee that at least one parent you give a pizza to will be in tears. They just are tired, they're emotional, you know, so stressed out and really scared about what's wrong with their child. They often haven't slept for a few days. They are just worn out and they are starving by this point. And then someone comes round with a pizza for free. They literally just reduce the tears and they just can't believe that someone would do that. So they're often overwhelmed and very emotional. And it's often the hot, you know, the only hot meal they've had for quite a few days. It's more than just a pizza. And I say that very often to a lot of people. It's so much more. And actually, we've had children who've not eaten for days in hospital. We had one boy, I think it was in Southampton, hadn't eaten for 5 days, refused, saw the pizza and then ate it and then improved and got home. So pizza does make a difference,
doesn't it?
I should be an advert for pizza company here, couldn't I?
Domino's or Pizza Hut or Papa John's, if you're listening.
Yeah. And we like supporting the local ones as well. So we do try to use local as well, wherever we can.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's fantastic. But it's interesting, isn't it, about the sort of, you know, eating in hospital, because if you're unwell, and they come around with the trolley at a particular time, breakfast or lunch or dinner, you might not necessarily be hungry at that particular time. So it's kind of, you know, what you're doing, it just helps, doesn't it? Every little helps.
Yeah, definitely. And Sophie would have times when she would be, obviously because of chemo, she'd be vomiting a lot. And they'd come around with the food and it had a distinctive smell that made her actually feel even more sick. Mm. And she'd be like, I'm not eating this. This is just disgusting. Get it out. I can't cope with the smell. But then later on would be hungry, but there was no option to eat any other time other than your 8, 12 and 5. That's the times of the day that you're allowed to eat.
Sure.
So, yeah, there was times I, you know, had to get, you know, either Deliveroo or something to try and help get some food in. Because when she wanted to eat, you're like, right, okay, get it quick. Whereas if we had a pizza there, you could have that and warm that up later, for example, when she's wanting to eat. Mm. So, or any other food, really, on that sort of things, really. But yeah, the food is quite shocking.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, isn't it, for anyone that's been in hospital, you know, it's just sometimes these things, you know, however little or big, they do make a difference. They really do make a difference.
Yeah, it's massive.
I mean, you guys have grown at quite a phenomenal rate. We touched on earlier, you know, 50,000 followers on social media. And of course, no doubt you're getting lots and lots of donations. Lots of people want to help in any way they can. But of course, for you running the charity, that creates a unique set of challenges, doesn't it?
Yeah. So we, you know, I just took a box up from, you know, back in January 22. I was trying to think of what year we were on. Yeah, 22. And I just wanted to feed parents because that was one of Sophie's wishes. And I just thought I need to start doing something to help me get up out of bed and, you know, give me some purpose. And it rocketed so quickly and has continued to do that. I mean, we have hospitals up and down the country that all know about us and are putting in things in place in terms of Sophie's legacy pilots or different trials, but it adds so many more layers because I just feel like I've run out of time on a daily basis. Mm. It's constant and I want to give a lot and we want to make a massive difference, but we come up against, you know, we have a big following, we have a lot of people wanting to help, which is amazing, absolutely incredible, and it's a brilliant problem to have. But we are then always trying to chase our tail with trying to think, right, what can we do? And we have some big, big projects coming up, which will hopefully make a really significant difference up and down the country and actually try and achieve these wishes.
Absolutely brilliant. Let's talk about some of your amazing volunteers. You were saying earlier about Caitlin.
Yes. So she's one of our young people. She's an incredible, incredible teenager who went from not being able to leave her house to, we had a ball in September. She stood up in front of the 250 people and said a speech about how the charity's changed her life. She literally volunteers for everything and is the most incredible, incredible teenager who has got so much to give, but the school and education systems probably failed her. But we will be taking her on as an apprenticeship next September when she officially finishes school.
Yep.
And give her a chance because she has so much potential and the charity has, what she says is like being one of the things that saved her. It's got her up, it's given her a purpose. She's there on every event, every sort of, we do supermarket days, we do so many things and she's there doing all of it. She has such incredible sort of passion and drive for the charity. And for a 15-year-old, she literally, she's got old head on young shoulders, that's for sure.
Brilliant. Well done to Caitlin. That sounds absolutely phenomenal. Let's have a chat about Trevor.
Yeah, old Trevor. He's like all of our granddads in the office. Bless him. He's 75. He was wanting, he had spare time. He gave up work 5 years ago.
He only popped into the office, didn't he, to drop some bits off?
Well, no, he wanted to give up. He said, I've got spare time, which is a fatal mistake to tell me ever. And he said, look, I'll give you a Thursday. I've got a Thursday free. I went,
You can have my Thursday.
I'll take your Thursday, thank you.
Oh, no,
and
Trevor.
He started last 18 months ago and loved the charity and he has fallen in love with it. And he is often coming in about 5 days a week now, volunteering. Today he has delivered the biggest load of, literally filled our van up. You couldn't get much more in that van. And to Southampton Hospital and to Ronald McDonald and all the others for crates and crates of food. He is an incredible person who literally, he was Santa the weekend and last week. He does everything. He's always up for whatever I throw at him, even though he often doesn't probably want to do half the things I ask him to. It's well out of his comfort zone. But he said at the start, it's given him such a purpose now. From retiring, he's sort of felt a bit lost from working all his life. And now he's got such a purpose and drive to get up every day. And it's exciting for him. It's, you know, he loves it. And he says he likes because he doesn't, his wife can't give him many things on his list anymore. It gets out because he's so busy with the charity. He said, it saves me having my wife give me jobs to do. I've got a good excuse now. Got to do the charity work.
Oh, brilliant. Trevor, you're a legend.
He is definitely a legend. He's the nicest person you can meet.
How do you find kind of, you know, finding volunteers or recruiting the right people? How have you found that as the sort of charity's grown?
Yeah, it is a challenge. I think probably lots of charities would say the same thing. It's really hard trying to find people who are willing to dedicate that regular time. It's because obviously, you know, whether that's weekly or fortnightly, it's having someone who's willing to give that up, you know, voluntary. But yeah, we often are obviously asking people, can they help or if they've got any free time? And we have a variety of ones who work full time, but can help on weekends or our events. Or we have ones who have some time during the week and they help on a regular basis. So we have a real mixture of volunteers. And yeah, we couldn't run this charity without them.
No, it's almost like your own little army.
It is.
Did you run a football match recently?
We did in May this year. We did. It was Sophie's All-Stars. So it was a team set up with my husband and his team of friends and everyone else versus Pompey Legends. We did it last year, and I'll just want to put that in there because we beat them last year, but this year they annihilated us.
Oh no.
So I don't want to tell you the score, but I want to hold on to the whip that we won last year. But they then ramped up the people, the players, and they pulled out the big guns this year, and we stood no chance really.
Oh, will it be making an appearance in 2024?
Yeah, so next year we have a game planned, which is in July, and that's Man United Legends versus Pompey Legends, but all raising money for Sophie's legacy. So that should be a pretty good game.
Where's that game happening?
So that's at Porchester Football Club.
Okay, cool.
So that should be really good.
Yeah,
absolutely. We're hopefully planning to get some big stars down as well, so not playing in terms of those things, but actually to do a bit of a Q&A in the evening as well for people.
Yeah, that sounds like you're gonna have a good turnout.
Yeah, I think that's gonna sell pretty quick.
I reckon so. I just wanted to touch on another topic, which is obviously this time of year especially, you know, in dealing with kind of grief and losing a lost one or losing somebody, you know, what would you say to those kind of people, you know, that maybe are going through a hard time, or maybe they're in hospital right now and, you know, things are really tough?
Yeah, and I think it's the time of the year when everyone's, you know, all stressing about whether they've got enough presents or worrying about they got enough food in. You know, we always overindulge over Christmas. We have more food than you can probably,
don't we?
You know, throw everything at, or whether they've burnt the turkey on Christmas Day or whatever. But actually what we've realised through, you know, our awful journey is that actually what really truly matters is the people around you and the memories that you make. So we don't buy Christmas presents for any of our like nieces or nephews. We do a day out now, or we try to do a memory making thing.
Oh, that's nice.
Because that's what they remember. If we asked them last year, what did we give you? They wouldn't have a clue, but you would remember the day out that they had. So not only does it take away a lot of stresses of us of not having to buy many presents and chasing all the shops and everything else, but yeah, it really aligns with what's important. And it is a tough time, really tough. It is one of my hardest times of the year is Christmas, because there's so many traditions and memories all meshed up in within that time. And I personally find it really, really difficult. It's painful. But I also want people to talk about it still.
Yeah.
It's such a subject that's not spoken about enough.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's one of those things is that people don't often, they want to help or they want to check in, but they can't necessarily find the words, or they're worried about maybe, you know, upsetting the other person.
Yeah, we've had people say, oh, I don't want to bring Sophie's name up because I don't want to upset you. And I'm like, just sort of think, I think about her every minute of the day. Mm. It's a constant. And actually, by not bringing up her name or talking about it or ask me any questions, it's like you've forgotten her, which actually is harder. So, you know, just ask that person. It's a bit like, you know, if you write Christmas cards, ask that person how they would want it, you to be. Would you like them to put their name in and somehow, or would they prefer not to? On Christmas Day, would you like there to be a spare chair left for a person, or would they not? Everyone's different, but actually it's asking that bereaved parent or person what they would prefer, and they will be really pleased that you ask them because you've thought of it, and that is so important.
That's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take another quick break. And then we're going to come back for part three. I can't believe how quickly the show is going. So, yeah, join us again in part three. Don't go anywhere. Like I said, I'm here with Charlotte from Sophie's Legacy. And we're going to talk about some of the challenges that you faced along the way in terms of not just setting up the charity, which is obviously, you know, not an easy thing to do, but you've done it. But, of course, running the charity on a daily basis. So, yeah, don't go away.
Live and local. Voice FM.
Let's hear more from Ian at Station Motors.
I think it's important to have a family business. My customers relate to it. I've been doing cars for people and now I'm doing their son's cars. My daughter works in reception and my son's nearly a fully qualified accountant. He does my bookwork, both very good drivers. I used to walk to school past his garage. It was a petrol station back then. So I ended up buying the garage off that family, you know. So I like to think I've brought my family into that family business.
Station Motors Woolston by the Itchen Bridge.
This is the sound of exercise when it's made fun. It's called VisoSport, and it started in Southampton. You meet up, you play fun games, you exercise, you laugh, you keep fit. It's for people of all abilities. Visit visosport.net or search for VisoSport in Meetup and have fun getting fit.
Southampton's voice. Voice FM.
I'm joined in the studio by the incredible Charlotte from Sophie's Legacy. Charlotte, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
It's flying by, isn't it?
It is.
It's absolutely flying by. And we're here talking about the incredible charity Sophie's Legacy. And we just finished the show really by talking about kind of the day-to-day of what it takes to sort of run the charity on a daily basis. And it's just absolutely mind-blowing, you know, the kind of stuff that you guys are doing, the families that you're helping. It's just, my heart goes out to you. So we just wanted to delve into some of the challenges that you faced along the way, because obviously just setting the charity up wasn't necessarily an easy process. You said before about kind of chicken and egg scenario. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the Charity Commission want you to open a bank account because you have to have £5,000 in the bank to actually even start a charity, to even apply for a charity.
Oh, right.
So a lot of people think, oh, you just start a charity, but you've got to fundraise £5,000 before you even apply. So we had that money, which we had raised, or people had raised for us. But then the Charity Commission want you to have a charity bank account, but the bank account want you to have a charity number to get a charity bank account. And I went, well, it's a chicken and egg. What one comes first? I need, one of you wants one thing and the other one wants the other. So it was a really tricky time. And yeah, so that was one of the examples of trying to just start it up and say the amount of paperwork needed to actually start it. And then you have then the, how do we grow it? How do we get the money? How do we get our name out there? How do we get businesses to back us? And yeah, it's a continual worry for me of like, if we take on overheads, we've got to then make sure we get the money to keep coming in, to keep funding that and keep supporting the families. And we take on more and more and more. And we're thinking, what if people stop supporting us in terms of the money? It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, saying no to families, it's almost like it would feel impossible because you're there to kind of help people. But it's interesting what you were saying there about, you know, the money and the budgets and stuff, because I didn't realise. And this is one thing that's really interesting, because there are lots of parallels between running a charity and running a business. But one of the differences is, in your particular case, 80% of what you bring in, the donations, that has to be spent on supporting families. So you've only got 20% of the total kind of charity income, shall we say, that can be used on things like marketing, on rent, on, you know, staff, whatever it might be. So when it comes to getting the word out there, you can't just say, well, we're gonna spend 50% on our marketing budget. You don't have that luxury.
No.
So that must be quite a challenging thing to do, because of course you have to justify every penny that you're spending. So that's a unique set of circumstances.
Yeah, and this is where it's different to running a business, because if you're a business, if you need, you know, you want to elevate your name and you get yourself out there, you invest in some marketing and, you know, you do well. But we have to spend the money on our core costs, which is supporting families in hospital. So over 80% has to be spent on that. Mm. The rest of that, even if that's fundraising, for example, that goes into your 20%, because that's not your core costs. So we might, like we did the ball, all of that money went into our 20%. And it's like, but I raised lots of money on the ball. It's really hard. It's so frustrating. And it does frustrate me a lot. But I know you have to spend the money on like the families, and we do. But then you want to also increase the awareness of you and like help with social media or help with the website or everything. And what we do is we just skill ourselves up.
Yeah.
Never before did I think I would be maintaining our website, or Hannah and our team doing our, you know, helping with social media and going on Canva and producing all these amazing posters and doing literally all these different things that we just are skilling ourselves up within the team that's we've got, which is a really small team. And we're just making sure we get literally the maximum we can out of everyone. Even if they don't realise they're good at it, they soon will be when they've done hopefully a bit of training by looking on YouTube and training themselves.
Oh, it's amazing. It's almost like it's a brilliant apprenticeship, isn't it? You're kind of almost like a jack of all trades.
Yes.
Master of some.
Yes, I would say master of some, because I'm not sure we're a master of all of them. But yeah, it is literally, we take on, so we do all of our, say, our social media, our website, our marketing, there's every aspect of that, because that is like, we can't justify spending that money on that. Mm. If we can blag that for free, I'm always up for that.
Well, that's, so. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So, I mean, what are the kind of immediate requirements? You know, anybody listening that thinks, you know, I really want to get involved with Sophie's legacy. I mean, what's on the wish list, so to speak? What's top priority?
Well, probably all of those things that I've just mentioned. So anything on the marketing, say any help on our website, or that might be even down to like, I know that you can get things like a text number. So text this number and anything else. And I'm like, how'd you get that? Mm. So, and you know, we've just got like pin badges, and I was asking people, where'd you get all these from? So there's so many bits on that side of it that is all just bonuses for us, because we're spending so much time on supporting families that we just don't get the time to do all of the others. And then that eats into our evening time, tends to be on, you know, scheduling posts or
I'm with you, getting the word out. Yeah. Because obviously the hope is that, you know, perhaps a large corporate sponsor or even a local business, it doesn't matter what size, but somebody might see it and they might say, yeah, we want to get involved, we want to donate either on a one-off or a regular basis. And actually that sort of fuels everything that you do.
Definitely. We just found out last week we've got the national one for Checker Trade. We have their national charity, which is
congratulations.
Incredible. Which is, you know, a big company like that to be one of the charity of the year for them.
That's going to be a game changer, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. You just never know what, because we obviously come this year, we had Rolls Royce as our, obviously we were named as their national charity. So, you know, you just never know what they're going to be able to provide, but I really hope so. But yeah, it's things also we would really like next year is like a celebrity patron. So lots of charities have patrons and we haven't got one. We really would like a patron for the charity who aligns really nicely either with the food, so even chefs or sort of people aligned with food, or within the hospital. So all different things. So we were like thinking like Peter Andre's wife, Emily Andre, who's a doctor in hospital, but really is a big advocate for women and children. And we were thinking, it fits really nicely. So anyone has contacts to these people.
Absolutely.
Or with like James Martin or anywhere else, and then let me know.
Gordon Ramsay.
We did meet Gordon Ramsay and he does still follow us, but I think he's too big. He will say no to us. So,
Well, any local celebrity chefs in Southampton, Hampshire? Well, to be honest, anywhere really.
We'll take it, yeah.
I love your outlook, Charlotte. Honestly, the studio is filled with kind of just energy. Charlotte's got her yellow t-shirt on, says Sophie's legacy, and I just think what you do is absolutely incredible. It's inspirational, to be honest with you. I just wondered as well whether or not you could maybe, because we've got a little bit of time left on this segment, just whether or not you could maybe share one or two stories of some of the people that you've helped. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, so we support, say, a whole variety of people, and I think a bit like me, you just think, oh, it will never be me. It will never end up in that situation, and then until it does. So, for example, we had a family whose 5-year-old child had quite a, you know, significant disability that meant that the mum was the full-time carer for them. And then their very healthy 3-year-old had a stroke and ended up having to be obviously admitted to intensive care. And then, so the dad then had to give up work because they needed one for the child at home and then one for the one in hospital. So, you know, we all factor in that you live to your means until something so major like that throws up something. And, you know, you then lose, you know, money because of your income. You have additional costs. And it is just so tough, like emotionally as well as physically and financially. So we had a family who spoke to them this morning, and they gave birth at 23 weeks. Now, no one plans to give birth that early. And they, you know, they're a lovely family who had planned, you know, their money, but they're planned to go on maternity leave like next year, not now. You know, this was so early. And so, you know, it throws up all host of different things because they've got at least a 6-month stay in hospital of, you know, until their baby is much stronger and bigger. Well, that is a massive financial burden on them. And, you know, the mum has to start maternity leave super early. So actually, when she does get to go home with her baby, she's already used probably the majority of that. And then you make the decision, do I stay off longer because you go back or not? So it's so many different scenarios. And then we have ones who are sadly, you know, end of life. You know, the children are terminal and they, you know, they break our hearts, to be honest. But we are there to support them. We had one last year who... sadly, it was a 2-year-old who sadly deteriorated really quickly, and his final wishes, he wanted to see Santa before he died, and we managed to get Santa up there, and we supported the family with quite a lot of different things, and yeah, and to make those final wishes happen are priceless, to be honest. You know, we do birthday parties in hospital, we always do them knowing that this might be the last. You know, it's sad to think that, but for some of these children, this is potentially could be their last one. So we do throw quite a few things at them, whether that's providing Spider-Man or, you know, amazing cakes or balloons and everything else. And, you know, sadly, we have done ones where we provide their birthday and it was their last, you know, and they sadly died later. But these are all things that are just so precious, and time is precious, and providing these memories in hospital. And just because you're in hospital doesn't mean you have to miss out. We provide like things for Halloween, for Christmas. So we did over 1,200 advent calendars we handed out this year to make sure that all children have advent calendars. We've got literally more toys we've handed out than I think the toy shop has probably produced to make sure that they've all got them. We've Easter, Mother's Day. We just make sure we cover Father's Day, every single event over the year. Because Sophie always used to get really upset that she was missing out on something, and we just make sure that no one misses out. Just because you're in hospital doesn't mean you miss out. We'll just bring it to you, and so that, yeah, they never have to miss out.
I'm absolutely lost for words. I just think it's absolutely incredible what you're doing. Yeah, absolutely incredible. Charlotte, what's next? What's next for the charity? What does 2024 hold?
Quite a lot. I mean, our team needs a good break over Christmas to be able to withstand next year's challenges, I think.
Recharge the batteries a little bit.
Yes, definitely. I think we're all really tired at the moment. So, yeah, next year we have some big events coming up. We have, say, a football match. We have, like, a dragon boat race. We have lots of running races and loads of things. We'll be putting that out next year for everyone to get behind. But we also plan to try and tackle some of the London hospitals. That's ours. So we currently cover 10 within the whole South. But our plan is that actually lots of these children bounce in and out of our London hospitals, like Evelina or King's or Great Ormond Street. And the same issues are there. They don't get fed. They don't get all these things. And we need to tackle that because there are so many families who are there a really long time. And so our plan next year is to try and tackle some of these hospitals and making sure they have got these basic essentials met.
Absolutely. It's probably going to come as a surprise to a lot of people out there, you know, that this stuff isn't available. And like you say, it's not just the emotional sort of strain and toll it takes. It's the financial, it's the just the logistics of, you know, going backwards and forwards.
Yeah. And we have families who are referred to us by the doctors or nurses or anyone within the hospital. And these are families who need additional support over and above what we currently provide, like with our food and drinks and everything else. And we are currently supporting on a weekly basis over 85 families who are currently in hospital within our, you know, the hospitals we cover. And they are the ones that, whether they need fuel in the car because they can't afford to put that in, or they need bus fares or whatever that might be, or they just need some additional emotional help as well. So we have a whole host of different families that get referred to us.
But amazing.
The financial toll is really high.
And what if people want to get involved, or they need some help, can they just, what do they do? Head on over to the website?
Yep, go to our website. There's a donate button that takes us to our Just Given page on our website. You can say message in, there's a contact us button on our website, or follow us on social media, contact us through social media.
Voice FM. Voice FM.
Greasy pizza boxes, and don't put in your recycling bin dirty tins and dirty plastic bottles.
If any of your recycling is dirty, greasy or wet, your whole bin could be rejected. So follow this golden rule: keep your recycling clean, dry and loose, and remember,
don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes.
This message is supported by Voice FM, and if you want to know more about recycling in Southampton, visit voicefmradio.co.uk/recycling.